old, I was driving in my brown 1979 Toyota Corolla through the streets of Lakeland. And it was a time in my life when I was really trying hard to be a good Christian. You ever had those times in life? Like you hear a sermon, you're like, I'm going to get really serious now, and I'm going to try really hard. And I was trying to be joyful and happy. I was listening to Christian music, and then somebody cut me off. And immediately, anger kind of welled up inside of me, and curse words started going through my mind. And I said a prayer. I said, God, you know, forgive me, you know, for being angry, and forgive me for these thoughts that I'm having. But, you know, that prayer didn't take the anger away. It's still there. And I still had thoughts of running the person off the road and, you know, giving it to him good. And so I felt discouraged. I felt discouraged. I was trying to be a good Christian, but there were these things involved inside and outside that were throwing me off my game. And what's interesting is that at that particular point in my life, it wasn't a one-time thing. I had been feeling discouragement for a long time. Many months earlier, I had read a book that was really popular back then by an author named Neil T. Anderson called The Bondage Breaker, I think is what it was called. And he focused on how important it is to take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. And I don't know if this is what the author intended, but I kind of interpreted that to mean that if I was a good Christian and I tried really hard and I said my prayers and went to church and listened to Christian music and made a good effort, that I wouldn't have bad feelings intruding in my life and I wouldn't have unwanted thoughts, that God would somehow take those away. And as I tried over and over again, I failed over and over again. And so my life as a Christian was like a ping pong ball, you know? It's like you go to church and you hear a sermon that tells you that you better get your life right, because if you don't, you might die in the car on the way home and go to hell. And then you feel fear and you feel guilt. And then you give your life back to Jesus. You start listening to Christian music and coming to church every time the doors open, and you're praying and you're hanging out with Christian friends, and you're really hoping. And then those thoughts keep coming and those feelings keep coming. And sometimes you even do things that you know to be wrong, and you start thinking, I'm a failure. And I felt for most of my life, until I started studying theology and got into graduate school, I felt most of my life like I was just a big failure. And I just couldn't be the person that God was calling me to be. And every time I tried, I would fail and get discouraged. And that created sadness and fear and anxiety and isolation. And so I did what a lot of people do. I went right back to the things that made me feel better. The partying, going to clubs, and, you know, all the other stuff that I don't need to get into that you probably know about. A lot of things that kind of that I thought was cool because my surfer friends did it, that would take the pain away. But then I would go back to church, I would hear Fire and Brimstone, and I would do it all over again. And I began to think to myself, if this is what it's really about, then maybe I don't believe what these preachers are teaching. Because what they're telling me is that if I do all of these things, that I will be happy, I will be joyful, I'll have peace, I'll have abundant life. And as hard as I try, it's just not clicking for me. Maybe it's not in the cards. Maybe the Calvinists were right and I'm reprobate. You ever felt like that? And so, what I came to realize is that I was pursuing a perfection that I would never attain. Indeed, that no human being could ever attain, because we're not in total control of our thoughts and feelings. We can't always be full of joy and full of peace and grounded and centered if we just try a little harder and say an extra prayer. That's not what it means to be a human being. And by trying to be perfect, by trying to be something other than the human being that God created me to be, I was creating all kinds of unnecessary anguish in my life. Maybe you've had this experience too. It was blocking the very things that I needed. It was blocking compassion. I couldn't have compassion on myself, and I found myself being very judgmental of other people. That was one of the thoughts that kept ripping through my mind, right? I was blocked off from forgiveness, from hope. I'd lost hope. And this blocked the path to the healing that I came to later find in Jesus. And it caused me to give up on faith over and over and over again. And so, I had to come to terms with the fact that to deny my own imperfection was to disown myself, because to be human is to be imperfect. And if you want to learn more about this, you can go back to message one in this series, which is on YouTube and iTunes, and I talk about that at great length, and we won't go over that again today. But in contrast, the way to freedom, healing, and wholeness begins with honesty and acceptance. True spirituality suggests a way of life where we do not deny, run away from, or even overcome our imperfections, but we learn to accept them and to live with them. And so we have to get honest about the struggle. Now, at the risk of sounding like Captain Obvious, human beings struggle in life. And we don't just struggle on the outside, we struggle deeply on the inside too. And in our quiet moments, we sometimes feel out of kilter, off balance, alone, empty, conflicted, and ungrounded and broken and fractured and lost. You guys know what I'm talking about, don't you? You get that kind of ache in your soul. And the Apostle Paul in Romans 7 describes it this way, and this is from the Message. I thought that the Eugene Peterson's The Message really says this well. Paul's pretty redundant in the NIV and the other versions, but Eugene Peterson captures it pretty awesome. Listen to the first thing that he says. I'm so full of myself. After all, I've spent a long time in sin's prison. What I don't understand about myself is that I decide one way, but then I act another, doing things I absolutely despise. So if I can't be trusted to figure out what is best for myself and then do it, it becomes obvious that God's command is necessary. But I need something more, for I know the law, but still can't keep it. And if the power of sin within me keeps sabotaging my best intentions, I obviously need help. I realize that I don't have what it takes. I can will it, but I can't do it. I decide to do good, but I don't really do it. I decide not to do bad, but then I do it anyway. My decisions, such as they are, don't result in action. Something has gone wrong deep within inside me. Are you listening, church? And gets the better of me every time. It happens so regularly that it's predictable. The moment I decide to do good, sin is there to trip me up. I truly delight in God's commands. But it's pretty obvious that not all of me joins in that delight. Parts of me covertly rebel. And just when I least expect it, they take charge. I've tried everything, and nothing helps. I'm at the end of my rope. Is there no one who can do anything for me? Isn't that the real question? Have you felt like this? That's what I was trying to describe in my life when we began this morning. We all have internal struggles. We all wrestle with good and evil, with right and wrong, with what we want to do in our deepest core, in our soul, and what the part that seeks pleasure in us wants to do. And when we mix this with external pressures, sometimes we mess up. In religious language, we sin. And this worsens our struggle because it just piles on more guilt. And we experience brokenness in our relationships. Trust is violated. And there are all kinds of negative consequences that are piled on with every wrong action until it becomes almost unbearable. And what I want you to hear this morning is this. Our problem is not that we're imperfect. This is important for the youth too, so you don't torture yourself all the way through college. It's not that we're imperfect. And our problem really isn't even that we occasionally do what we know we shouldn't do. The problem is that we refuse to admit our flaws and shortcomings. We live in denial, and we try to hide them from ourselves, and we try to hide them from others. And I want you to think back to the first human beings, Adam and Eve. This is what they did in the garden. Do you remember? God gave some commands and gave them the perfect life, and they turn away. They do exactly what God says not to do, and it says in Genesis 3, beginning with verse 8, "Then the man and his wife heard the sound of God as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day." Isn't that beautiful language? "And they hid from God among the trees in the garden. But God called to the man, 'Where are you? Where are you?'" If you think about it, there's lots of ways that we hide from our sin. We hide our sin. The first way that we hide from it is we blame others. Right? It's really hard to take responsibility for our wrong actions. Human beings almost have a talent for shifting blame, right? I mean, we're just really good at it, including your pastor, right? If you don't believe me, ask my wife. She'll tell you, right? It's much easier, instead of owning it, because if you own it, you have to do something about it, or else you're just a broken record and no one trusts you anymore. But if you really own it, you have to do something about it. And it's just much easier to say, well, let me blame the circumstances. I was really stressed out, or this person was in my ear. You know, we like to blame the circumstances or point the finger at somebody else and say it's their fault. And this is one way that we hide our sin. Another way is to redefine right and wrong, to change the rules or lower our standards. Now, it's really important for us to remember that because our knowledge, because our thinking is fallen and flawed, sometimes we get it wrong when we're trying to figure out what is good and what is bad. Just a couple of examples, if you don't believe me. There was a time in this country when it was not only illegal, but it was considered to be grossly immoral for a black person and a white person to be married. And we look back and we cringe and we go, "Oh, we really got that one wrong." Yeah. Sorry, God. And there are other examples. The church throughout its history in different ways has either been complicit or it has actively supported the institution of slavery and the oppression of women. We're not blameless in this if you read history. Right? Don't forget the Spanish Inquisition and the Salem witch trials and the Holy Wars, in which we did all kinds of nasty things in the name of God. So I'm not suggesting that we should never rethink our morals. As our knowledge grows and as we mature spiritually, it is right and good for us to take a little time to question what we've always taken for granted, and to say, maybe I've been mistaken here when I've said this is wrong or this is right. Maybe there needs to be an adjustment. However, we should not casually, somebody say casually, we should not casually or compulsively redefine right and wrong to escape sin that is inconvenient for us. We shouldn't say, well, I don't really want to give up this sin, so I'm just going to move the goalposts a little bit and change the rules so that I can continue doing this and pretend as if I'm not doing anything wrong. Unfortunately, we sometimes do this too. You know, once upon a time, pride was a sin and humility was a virtue. And now we've gotten to a point in our culture where the proud are revered as they mock and ridicule the humble. Another example is the way that we relate to money. Remember Jesus? the guy that we follow? Jesus was very clear about the danger in love of money, the dangers of wealth. And Jesus commanded us to care for the poor. But what do we do today? We empower and revere the wealthy as if they're somehow superior to the rest of us. We worship money and we ignore the poor. So you see, the church is guilty of this too. And these ways of trying to hide our sin by blaming others or by compulsively redefining right and wrong, the thing is they keep us stuck. They keep us stuck where we are. And the good news this morning is that they're unnecessary. A lot of times we feel like it's necessary for us to hide our sin and pretend like everything is okay. And let me tell you, Christians, we're the worst at this, right? We know that we're supposed to be joyful and positive and loving, and so we can be having the most horrible day, depressed, so depressed we can hardly get out of bed, and we'll go into Walmart and see a friend, and someone will say, "How are you?" "I'm doing great," right? Just hide it. Hide the struggle. Hide the sin. But it's unnecessary for two reasons. Number one, it's unnecessary to hide our imperfections because human beings are not called to be perfect. You were made a finite creature capable of mistakes. That's how God put you together. God doesn't scorn you because you are the creature that He's created you to be. That's ridiculous. And so, because we know that all of us are imperfect, because none of us are God, we can just honestly say, "Yep, I make mistakes." Have you gotten to that point in your life? It's freeing. When you make mistakes and you don't get defensive and point the finger and tell everybody why you didn't make a mistake, if you just say, "You know what, man, I goof up sometimes," you feel a burden lifted off of your shoulders. And so it's by accepting our imperfection that helps us get unstuck, and knowing that all of us sin and fall short of God's glory, we don't have to hide our sin because there is forgiveness. Now, if there wasn't forgiveness, we might have a reason to want to hide our wrongdoing. But because God says, if you bring it out in the light, bring it out in the open, I will forgive you, there's no reason to hide it. One of the early church fathers, Gregory of Nyssa, said that human beings cannot be perfect. Only God is perfect, and the best that we can hope for is progress. Have you ever been to a 12-step meeting? They will say, progress, not perfection. And Marcarius, another early church father, said that human life is like a journey in which we repeatedly fall down and stand back up again, and fall down and stand back up again. And that we're not going to be perfect, we all struggle, but we can set a more realistic goal of not falling into despair and becoming inactive when things are going bad, and not becoming complicit when things are going good. So since we are called to progress and not perfection, we don't have to deny our imperfections. We can embrace them as part of what it means to be a human being. We also don't have to hide our sin because God offers forgiveness. So if you remember in 1 John chapter 1, it says, "If we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. If we say that we have not sinned, we make God a liar and His word is not in us." What is John saying? All of us mess up. All of us sin. But it also says in the same chapter, if we confess our sins, He who is faithful and just will forgive us and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. You don't have to hide your sin because we've all done it. Look at the person next to you. Now look to the other side. Guess what? They've stepped in it too. We've all sinned. It's part of what it means to live in a fallen world and struggle with good and evil. But if you've confessed and been forgiven, somebody raise your hand. Grace upon grace, right? So we don't have to hide our sin. Rather than hiding our faults and failings, we are healed and set free through acceptance and confession. Acceptance begins by acknowledging that all of us are imperfect, broken, and sinful, and that there's nothing that we can do to save ourselves or achieve perfection in this life. Just give up on that. It's going to save you a lot of turmoil in your life. Just give up on that quest for perfection. And when we do this, we realize that the problem that human beings struggle with does not have a human cure. I just want you to think about that for a minute. Human problems don't have a human cure. The cure has to come from a power beyond ourselves. The cure comes from God. But too often we rely on our own intelligence, resourcefulness, and willpower. We try over and over again to be perfect and over again to refrain from those sins that we struggle with, and we fail repeatedly. And I'm here to tell you that God intends that failure and that struggle to lead to something else. It's intended to get you to the end of your rope so that you will cry out for help. God, save me, whether I like it or not. And so, if you cry out to God, it's a sign that you might be ready to live a different kind of life, a life of surrender and acceptance. So the first step in finding peace is abandoning the quest for perfection and by fully accepting that we are flawed, broken, and prone to sin. And that puts us in a position to receive help. And this leads me to my last point in the message this morning, and that is this. True spirituality helps us to see that honesty and acceptance leads to one of the greatest Christian virtues. Now, I'm going to warn you that when I say this word, it's going to sound like a bad word to you because of the culture that we live in. But according to the Bible, according to the best of the Christian tradition, honesty leads to a great virtue, the virtue of humility. And humility leads to compassion. Honesty leads to humility, which is an honest view of who we are, warts and all. And once we honestly acknowledge our own faults and failings, it leads us to be more compassionate with other people. The more honest we are about our own imperfections, the more we feel connected to other people, not in terms of our strength and virtue, but in terms of our weakness and failing. Is that your experience? I mean, think about the deepest connections you have. It's not because you think you're great and you find somebody else that thinks that they're great and then you skip off into the horizon together. Usually it's because you feel like you're dealing with something that's really painful and really embarrassing and really shameful, and you feel like you're alone, and then someone else comes along and says, guess what, I struggle with that too. And all of a sudden, you're best friends. Because we're connecting with people, not in our strength, but in our weakness, in our struggle. And so, the more we acknowledge and accept our own weakness and shortcomings, the more compassionate we are with the failings and shortcomings and weaknesses of other people. If you've ever attended a 12-step group, you will have heard this phrase: all are welcome here, none are judged. Wouldn't it be great if the church could be a place like that? I did a lot, had a lot of friends that went through recovery. I did a lot of research in graduate school on addiction recovery. I've been to a lot of meetings. And I have found more honesty and more humility and more compassion in the basements of the church where they're meeting than I did on Sunday morning in the sanctuary where we wrestle with judgmentalism and all the things that make people not want to be a Christian. And the reason why they can say that sincerely in a 12-step meeting, all are welcome, none are judged, is because as they look around, they know that they have done worse or are capable of doing worse than every single person sitting in the room. And that honesty destroys judgmentalism and ushers in compassion. My friends, God created you for compassion. God created you for compassion, which is an expression of love. Beautiful compassion. That's what God has put in your core. That's your fear and your struggle for perfection and your failure and your hurt and your depression and your anxiety. It's covered it up. It's put it in the dark. But deep down in there, God has put compassion at your core. And the Holy Spirit can just draw it out of you to be poured out. Not only on others, but on yourself. Do you have compassion for your own faults and failings? And as we try to gauge how honest we are being with ourselves about our faults and failings, a really important question to ask is, how gracious am I being with others? It's a good test. There's a story of two 6th century monks, Father John and Father Barsanaphus, who I'll call Father B for short. And Father John asked a friend to do something, and it wasn't done to his satisfaction, and so he really harshly scolded the guy. I mean, he's lit into him. And we've seen this, right? I've seen parents at the grocery store light into their kids. I have lit into my kids at the grocery store, severely scolding them. And he felt really bad because there was a fallout in their friendship, and so he writes Father B a letter. And he explains the situation, and he says, you know what, I feel really bad. I know that it's my fault. I know that I'm a sinner, and that most of my problems are my own fault. And Father B is not impressed with this pseudo-confession. And he says, John, that's not the truth. He said, you say I'm a sinner, but I can tell by the way that you're acting that you don't believe it. Because anybody who knows that they are a sinner doesn't go around harshly scolding other people. And he concludes the letter by saying, pay attention to yourself, brother. Pay attention to yourself. This is not the truth. And so the point of the story is simple. If you're not very compassionate and gracious with the flaws of others, if you're critical, if you're negative, if you're scolding other people, if you're traveling, if your environment, if you're like a spider who is weaving invisible rules and then waiting for people to step into it so that you can run over and snap them, if that's your spirit, you are not being honest with yourself about your own failures and flaws. Because if you get in touch with the way that you mess up, it will break your heart when you see other people suffer the same kinds of things. So I'm going to ask the band to come forward. And I just want to say, in summary, our problem is not that we're imperfect. And our problem is not even that we occasionally sin and do bad things. It's our refusal to honestly acknowledge and accept these things. And so instead of blaming others and minimizing and changing the rules when they don't suit us, the solution begins with honesty. Honesty about our own imperfections. Honesty is about our own wrongdoing. And once we get honest, the next step is to accept. Somebody say accept. Accept the imperfections and confess, say confess, confess our sin so that we can let it go. It doesn't hang on to our hearts and drag us along the way. And in the safety provided by forgiveness and acceptance, we can learn to live graciously with our imperfections and move beyond our past mistakes. The more we are aware of our own faults and failings, the more compassionate we're going to be with the faults and failings of others. And as we grow in compassion, we move from shame to grace. Shame is a sickness that God can deliver you from. And we move from darkness to light. We move from slavery to freedom. But it's all about honesty, surrender, acceptance, forgiveness, and compassion. This is what God wants for you, my friends. And so I want to encourage you this week. I want to challenge you. This is your homework. I want you to take a couple of weeks, and I want you to write a fearless moral inventory. A searching and fearless moral inventory is what it's called in 12-step programs. In the Christian church, it's called preparing for confession. Before you do your first confession, you spend some time thinking about all the wrongs you've committed. And it's important for you to write these things down, even if you've got to lock it up so that no one else can see it. Imagine trying to inventory a grocery store without writing anything down. You need to write it down. And I want to encourage you to think back over your life, over all the wrongs that you have committed, and write those things down and try to be as exhaustive as you can. And then find one person that you really, really trust. Maybe it's a therapist. Maybe it's a priest in the anonymity of confession. Maybe it's a good friend. But sit down with them and share that inventory with them. Oftentimes we say, God, forgive me, and God forgives us, but we hang on to it. And the reason why is because we need another human being to say, I've heard it all, and I still love you. And if you've never done this before, it has power to set you free. I'm going to challenge you to do that. And this morning, if you have never sincerely confessed your sin before God, I'm going to give you a chance to do that too. I'm going to ask all of you to close your eyes and bow your heads. And here in the Methodist Church, you know, we don't do anything that's going to embarrass you. We're not going to ask you to stand up and come forward and give a speech. Just in the comfort and safety of your own pew, if you have never come before God and said, God, I have really messed up and I'm sorry and I know that I can't fix it and I need you to set me free and forgive me, if you've never done that, or if you haven't done that in a long time, I'm going to count to three, and with not a single person looking around, I'm just going to invite you to raise your hand. One, two, three. God sees you, my friend, and you. Hands are going up all over the place. Now, I want you to know, my friend, that when you raised your hand, it wasn't just me that saw you. God saw you too. You are forgiven. You need to let it go and heal and move on. Don't drag that dead horse behind you for the rest of your life. God has so much more for you. He doesn't want you to beat yourself up over and over and over again for things that He's already forgiven on the cross of Jesus Christ. Let it go. And now, if there are those of you here who have never just honestly accepted your imperfection, I'm going to give you a chance to respond to by raising your hand. And when I count to three, if you want to say, God, I'm sorry for trying to be more than the human being you created me to be. I'm not going to try to be perfect anymore. I'm going to be a loving, compassionate, generous Jesus follower, and I accept my imperfection. Raise your hand. One, two, three. Hands are going up everywhere. God sees you. You're already accepted. God's already accepted you. Now open your eyes. I want you to put your hand on the person next to you, if there's someone next to you. And I want to put your other hand on the other person next to you. And I want you to look at each other, and I want you to say, you are accepted. Now look at the other person. You are accepted. God accepts you, my friends. He's called you to so much more. Now go and share that acceptance and compassion and grace with other people. Let the bitterness out of your heart, drain it like poison, and allow the grace of God to fill you up so that you are generous to other people, so that they will know that when you say, I serve a generous God, that you're actually telling them the truth. If you'll do that, say amen. Now let's get to our feet and worship God this morning.